longer. It's amazing. It just
I couldn't agree with you more. But yeah. This was the way they did it, and that's the way it happened. The captain had been telling everybody and poking them that we had to be finished so as to take part in the second front, in other words, mm-hmm. the Normandy landings, mm-hmm. which we didn't know anything about in detail. Mm-hmm. Well, it turned out that on the 6th of June, 1944, we were still sitting in Liverpool, and we got a message during the night saying that they anticipated that the Germans might retaliate with paratroop drops at various places, including Liverpool, and that we were to land the maximum number of men under arms to deal with these fellows. Well, at about 6 in the morning, there was great excitement going on in the ship while they fitted out the Jolly Jacks with rifles and submachine guns and Bren guns and everything. And I happened to go up to the hangar deck, and these keen young men were all pointing their loaded weapons at each other and saying, bang, bang, you know. I thought, this is no place for me, so I went down below again. But we sent these people off various places to patrol the dock areas, and of course nothing happened. And we tuned in on the BBC, our radio, to hear what was going on. And we sure didn't have any part in the invasion of the continent. Well, then we went back to the Clyde and re-embarked our squadron. In addition, we had a flight of fighters. And then we went to do our workups in the western approaches. We were based in Belfast, and we also worked out of Larne, where they had a training establishment, and we worked with submarines there, British submarines. One of the interesting things, I spent a day at sea in a submarine while our aircraft were beating it up.
Must be experience being a submarine while
yes, it was.
Not too many people live to tell the tale.
It was very interesting, very quiet, very peaceful. We had various adventures while we were doing that. One of our aircraft, in night flying, which is one of the things we were exercising, fully loaded with depth charges and everything, it lost its horizon when he was approaching the ship. Mm-hmm. And he landed in the water. Well, he flew right into it. And the pilot escaped, although he was very badly injured. He had a great hole in his head. But the other three members of the crew were killed when the depth charges went off. The pilot was rescued by a destroyer that was escorting us. And he was brought back on board, and we had to go back to Liverpool, I guess, to land him, because he was in a bad way. But he did survive, and I met him years after. He came and lived in Montreal. He was an RNVR officer. Well, then we were working up as an anti-submarine ship. That was to be our role, and we spent about 3 weeks doing that. The senior flying officer on board was known as the commander flying. He was an RN lieutenant commander. Mm-hmm. And when we were inspected by the flag officer carrier training, he found that the state of the squadron was not up to required standard, and he fired this fellow, bang. He told him to get the hell off the ship that day.
Well, what happens, and you mentioned somebody else who was fired, the fellow who ran the ship aground off the freighter. If you're fired, what happens?
That doesn't mean that you're out of the Navy.
Yeah.
Necessarily, you can be dismissed by a court-martial or a disciplinary court, but when somebody's fired like that, they just remove them, and I don't know what happens to them. They go to another appointment where they can't make any trouble.
Yeah.
He was removed forthwith, and we got another chap who apparently was a much better man, and one that everybody seemed to get along with, and he got the required support from his squadron personnel. Well, from the Clyde, we were sent up to Scapa Flow to join the home fleet, which of course is not what we'd been trained for. And the ship was fitted out with a new type of mine. It was an influence mine that responded to acoustic, magnetic, or pressure influences. And we were told that we would be sent to mine the Norwegian Leads, which was a passage down between the mainland of Norway and the islands outside, and it was used extensively by the Germans for their coastal trade, bringing iron ore down from Narvik and places like that. Well, we went on the first exercise. There were three carriers, I think, on that one, and some cruisers and destroyers, and we successfully laid our mines in the Leads. We were not bothered by aircraft or submarines, and it was quite a straightforward thing. Then we went back to Scapa Flow, and they were preparing for a major attack on the Tirpitz, which was then lying in one of the Norwegian fjords, Ka Fjord. And the task force, which was told off to go and do this job, consisted of three fleet carriers, the Indomitable, the Formidable, the Furious, two escort carriers, the Tracker and the Nabob, and a whole bunch of, and the battleship Duke of York, and some cruisers, and a whole bunch of destroyers and frigates. Mm-hmm. And we went, this was Operation Goodwood, and our Avengers were to drop these fancy mines, and the other aircraft, Fireflies and Barracudas and everything, were going to drop conventional bombs or beat up the defenses, the anti-aircraft defenses. And they always took an opportunity because there was fighter cover whenever our aircraft did their stuff to beat up anything that was in sight. It was an enemy, either radar stations or wireless stations or any ships that were in the area, small trawlers or anything. We were supposed to attack on this combined air attack on the 22nd of August, and the participation of our aircraft and Tracker's aircraft, which were carrying the mines, we both had 14 Avengers, and we had embarked a flight of four Wildcat fighters. They found that there was an overcast over the fjord, and it was below the tops of the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So they canceled the laying of these mines, which were to be dropped all around the Tirpitz,
mm-hmm.
because they were afraid that if they dropped them blindly, some might land either on the land or on the ship itself. And as they were very secret development, they didn't want to do this, so they canceled our participation. The other aircraft bombed blind, didn't do any great damage to the Tirpitz. And then we hauled out to sea, and we had to refuel the destroyers, and we were just preparing to refuel a Norwegian destroyer, the Stord, which was manned by the Free Norwegians,
mm-hmm.
and about just after 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we were hit by one torpedo. I'd been up all the night before doing ciphering, and we'd been at action stations since 6 in the morning, and I decided that when we stood down and they were going to do the fueling, that I would lie down for a while and snatch some sleep. So I was asleep when the torpedo hit. And at that point, we hadn't had the rum issue, which is normally at noon. And that's always witnessed by an officer and various other people who are involved in the thing, plus the people from the various messes who go and collect the rum ration for the day. They were all down in the spirit room, which was in the bowels of the ship, and it was just where the torpedo hit. And they were nearly all killed, except for the officer, a Canadian lieutenant called Jim Goad. And the force of the explosion and the water coming in blew him up through a couple of deck levels, and he ended up in an air pocket, and he was able to stay alive. Shortly after, he was trapped there for some time after the thing hit. And of course, when the as soon as the torpedo hit, the ship stopped,
mm-hmm.
and we were called to action stations. Incidentally, just before, when we were preparing to do our fueling, a German aircraft, they called it a snooper, you know, it was a reconnaissance aircraft.
Condors?
No, it was a Blom and Voss something or other. It was sighted in the area, and it was shot down by one of our combat air patrol of fighters that were orbiting around up top. It wasn't by one of our aircraft, but from one of the aircraft from the other carriers. We manned the guns and everything, as we anticipated. It wouldn't be long before the Luftwaffe appeared on the scene, but they didn't. One of the destroyers of the frigates escorting us of the fourth escort group crossed our bow and did a thing called Operation Observant, which is what you do when there's a submarine in the area. And he was going at full speed, and the submarine fired a second salvo of torpedoes, too. Mm-hmm. One hit us of the first lot, and the other passed ahead. But it hit this frigate, the Bickerton, in the stern. It was an acoustic torpedo, a gnat. Mm-hmm. And it blew the stern off. And all sorts of strange things happened. It broke some smoke floats on the on the quarterdeck, force of the explosion, and there were clouds of white smoke all over the place, and the sirens stuck open on the funnel, mm-hmm. and it was making weird noises. And of course, the ship filled with smoke from aft, and they had to abandon ship right away, and she was sinking. They lost about 40 men, and we had lost 22, and then we had a number who were injured as well. But I was on the flight deck with my anti-aircraft guns when this ship, this Bickerton, was hit, and we all thought she dropped a pattern of depth charges, you know, which was an encouraging thing. And of course, it wasn't. It was a stern being blown off. Eventually, she had to be sunk by a British destroyer and put a torpedo in her because she was still half submerged and floating around. Well, we were stopped from time of the hit, which was 5:15 or 5:16, until about 9 at night, and we were being there were frigates circling us to keep submarine away, and mm-hmm. The Kempthorne, another one of these frigates, took off all the air personnel, some 200 odd, and they took our wounded or injured as well. Well, then by 9 o'clock, there'd been tremendous effort down below of the damage control parties, and shoring the bulkheads, and they managed to. They found that the propeller shaft, when they had one, had not been damaged. Mm-hmm. And of course they had to close down the boilers as soon as the ship was hit. But they were able to relight the boilers, and that meant we could get power again, electricity. And that meant we could get the pumps going and everything else. And by 9 o'clock, they found that we could steam at 5 or 6 knots, and we started get underway, and we were told to go home. The British Admiral, who was in Duke of York, sent a message telling us that if we couldn't get started in such and such a time, I think it was an hour or something, that we were to abandon ship, and that they would sink her, you know, finish her off. Our captain didn't think much of that. He sent the British Admiral a very rude message saying he had no intention of abandoning his ship and having it sunk by our side. Well, the fact that we got underway was encouraging, and through the night the submarine again located us, and it was picked up on direction finding radio, mm-hmm. and we flew off, in spite of the fact that the ship was well down by the stern, we flew off two aircraft with two Avengers with a more educated type of bomb or weapon. It was a torpedo that homed. And they didn't sink the submarine, but they put it down, and they stayed up for 4 hours or so. And when we were steaming at that point, we got up to 6 knots, time came to land the aircraft on again. The first made a successful landing. The second one, just as it was touching down, the ship entered a fog bank, and we were 3 degrees north of the Arctic Circle. You know, the water was good and cold up there. And he crashed, but he crashed into the deck park right at the bow where we had other aircraft, because we couldn't get them all down in the hangar with the number we had on board. And his educated torpedo fell out of the bomb bay and rattled around the upper deck. That was a faintly frightening experience, too. Well, when dawn came, we had this bunch of wrecked aircraft up forward, and we had to just push them over the side because there was no way that we could keep them. Mm-hmm. Well, then we had to put the maximum effort into lightening the ship aft, and we had 2 5-inch guns there in sponsons, which is a big gun, and they were attacked with acetylene torches, and we just chopped the barrels off them and dropped it over the side. And we threw all the ammunition we could over the side, and we tried to lighten the ship in every possible way. And we kept on heading for Scapa Flow. It took us 5 days to get there, but we ran into 2 gales, which caused a lot of trouble. On the second day, the Algonquin came and took another 200 people off, because our difficulty in feeding them. Now, we had put food dumps, bully beef and biscuits and things, and a keg of rum. I put the keg of rum in the reference book locker, which had a lock on it. But we couldn't keep feeding all these people. We didn't have enough food, so they took off. But the Algonquin was a Canadian ship, and the captain was now retired Rear Admiral Debbie Pierce, and we were old friends. And when they were alongside taking the people off, which was done by boat, he called up to me on his bullhorn. He said, "Look, can you let me have some food and some toilet paper?" He said, "I've got twice as many men as I had." And he said, "We're running out of food and we haven't any toilet paper." Well, fortunately, the storeroom where the toilet paper was accessible, hadn't been flooded, so we were able to pass them some great cases. He was very pleased with that. And we managed to give him some of the food that we had. And eventually, submarines were detected in our area, and the best thing that cheered us up was we sighted a Catalina aircraft from Coastal Command that about the third day on the way home. And eventually we got back to Scapa Flow. And we disembarked the aircraft that remained serviceable. And we were there for a number of days while they again tried to lighten the ship. And then we were towed down to Rosyth in the naval dockyard in Rosyth in Scotland, where we were put alongside. And again, our captain, who was not the person to be imposed upon, he insisted that the ship be docked so as we could get the bodies out, because we had no way of getting at them. Well, that took a lot of effort. I guess it took about 3 weeks, because we had to again remove all the weight we could, and eventually we had to flood the bow compartments to bring the stern up enough to get it over the sill on the dry dock. And the bodies by then had been in there for 6 weeks, so they were getting rather high, and the ship was permeated with the smell. As soon as the dock was pumped out and the water was out, the officers who remained on board, a lot of people had left by then, but and we had sent a large number of our men off to the Canadian base at Niobe in Scotland and the Clyde. It was an unpleasant task digging out the bodies and putting them into coffins, and they were buried the next day, and I showed you some pictures there of the funeral. Then everybody left. Now, I guess that was about the 28th of September, except three of us who were left behind to wrap up the final things. And they were all officers in my department, all three of us. There was a lieutenant called Charlie Park from Winnipeg, and the captain's secretary, who's now living in Victoria, and his vice admiral, David Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's an old friend of mine, too. We stayed because we had to do this finishing up. And one evening we were up in the ship's office, which was in one of the galleries under the flight deck, making sure that everything was teed up there, and we sniffed and said, gee, there's a funny smell of smoke. And we went along and came out through a doorway that looked down into the hangar deck. You couldn't see a thing. You couldn't see your hand in front of you. It was filled with smoke. So we took off in rather a hurry, and we found that a fire had started in the damaged area. Now, that was full of depth charges and bombs and ammunition of various kinds and everything. And what had happened was, when the last Canadians left, they reverted the ship to an RN crew, a very small one, just a care and maintenance crew. And we stopped eating Canadian and started eating British, which was a lot less attractive. Well, we ran around outside the ship, round the dock, and looked in the hole, and the flames were leaping up and down. Well, there was nothing we could do. There was no water in our ship. What had happened was one of the new men, an electrician, a naval rating, an RN one, he didn't know anything about the ship, and he'd gone into where they have the electrical controls, you know, I forget what you call the thing, but and he closed a switch for making a circuit, and of course the thing started sparking and in the damaged area, and it ignited the oil fuel. Somebody phoned the fire department, and the Dunfermline, which is the town there, fire department arrived. They took one look inside, saw all these bombs and things, and said, we're not going to play in this league, and they all went away. And they had to call in the people from the firefighting school in the dockyard, who were all naval ratings, and they eventually put the fire out. But the three of us decided we there was nothing we could do hanging around, so we got into the ship's jeep and we drove about a mile away to the officers' club, and we said, if the damn thing blows, there's nothing we can do to stop it, we'll just watch from here. Well, then in the next few days we left there and went to stayed a few days in the Canadian barracks at Niobe, and then we were given passage in the Queen Mary, and we came home to New York and on to Canada. It took us 7 days to cross at 29 knots, and that completed the saga of the Nabob. Do you want to pack it up then?
Sure, yeah, that's a good place to stop.
So we're on fire, we were falling and landing where the three was. You know, you don't have that shit going on. Along the way, there would have been a seven, not necessarily.
You take it's a 11:45. I'm B.J. Bennett. For your information, St. John's Anglican is sponsoring 4 9-day summer camps for students 5 through 11 years of age this summer. It includes fun for all ages, included from 5 through 11, creative play, and learning life skills. If you'd like more information about the St. John's summer camp for kids or to volunteer, call 383-7169. This community service message is presented by Island Farms Dairy, your choice of island freshness.
This is the final week of Sears warehouse sales, and every store is filled with truckloads of great savings and values. Right now, save $80 on a rugged Kenmore washer-dryer team. Save $82 on a microwave oven. Save $150 on a built-in Kenmore dishwasher. Or Sears Apedic Luxury Plus and Furniture Sleep Sets, now half price. Sears warehouse sale ends this Saturday, so hurry into Sears, where you get your money's worth and more.
Here is an important message from CPR.
America.
The airline is very pleased to announce that a potential strike by three of its unions has been averted. Full schedule operations are being maintained, and all flights will be operating as planned. All employees are on the job and will continue to serve CPR's valued customers. You can continue to book CPR with confidence. For reservations, call your travel agent or CPR.
We know what, we know how, we know what we want and we want it now. You're holding up your dreams to the best that it takes to keep coming through. Come on, Betsy, now. You want the best days now. Go for the best days.
Here's Manfred Mann in CKDA Radio.
Through the night, through the dawn, whatever it is, you will know the American's born. Don't look back, you've been there. See the mist as you're out, it's the air. And it's underneath the moonlight. And it's only your heart beats in the moonlight like a drum.
Off the coast of Oregon. By the Japanese. They were torpedoed by a Japanese.
Don't look back, back. You've been there.
The Japanese were terribly embarrassed because of this. There's the part they weren't at war with the Russians. Now there's a book about that.
And you will run your own time.
Particular instrument. Yeah. Now, there were two Russian submarines that were found at that time. Whether the one I was aboard is the one that got sunk or not, sunk for all hands.
What you say, keep your cool, though you can't see.
But anyway, we got back to the
heavy
moonlight.
He was open to the mail.
And, I ran it over his shoulder, and I was just normal, I was thinking I jumped about 6 feet in the air, but then this was just shortly to be sent over to England to be converted into a landing ship. We had, by then they stopped calling us an armed merchant cruiser, and we were called a jewelry cruiser. My wife and I were planning to get married basically in June 43, but I could see that that was going to be a little difficult.
BJ Bennett, another great day for cycling along the Dallas Road beach waterfront with the breeze blowing through your hair. Have fun in the sun and remember to use your hand signals. It's here for 4 days only. It's the one and only Can-West Sidewalk Sale. The Summer Sidewalk Celebration with sizzling prices on super summer merchandise and more at super clearance prices. The Summer Sidewalk Celebration on now. Step up on it. See what the rainbow holds for you during our summer sidewalk sale on now at Canwest Shopping Center, 2945 Jacqueline Road.
Welcome to Bank of Montreal Instabank, a whole new way for you to bank on your time.
Instabank Blue, Instabank Blue, fast and friendly.
Instabank is the fast and friendly way to do most of your everyday banking 7 days a week. So you can get the cash you need when you're in a hurry. Make a deposit even though you've worked late. Check your balance, transfer money, and pay your bills when it's most convenient for you. I'm an Instabank administrator, and I'd like to show you all the things Bank of Montreal Instabank can do for you.
Instabank Blue, when you're in a rush, you can get it all done, no bother, no fuss.
Come on in to any Bank of Montreal branch and find out how you can bank on your time.
Instabank Blue, Instabank Blue, Bank of Montreal.
I was appointed as the officer of the dockyard. Well,
Bill?
Yeah.
The dockyard has had
for 3 days now.
I know.
If we don't find civilization soon, we've had it.
Boy, you got that right.
Hey, what's that ahead?
It's a light. It's an end. I don't believe it.
We're saved.
Hello, gentlemen. You're safe here. What can I do for you?
What did he say?
He said, what can I do for you?
Oh, we'd like a pizza and a couple of crisp coconuts, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, gentlemen. Well, afraid we don't have coconuts.
Well, that's no good for me.
How about a little Wiener Schnitzel?
See you, Otto.
Coconut beer. Brewed right in the coconuts.
Excuse me. Could I get that pizza to go off?
New Chevy Spectrum. Everyday BC driver just got sporty.
That's the Chevy way to go.
Here's Graham Parker, waking next to you at CKVA. It's 11:52.
Hey, baby.
Me,
Admiral Dillon, today is the 11th of July, 1985, and my name is Mark Hill.